Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 170. Science Faction, what are periods?
I know.
Please, Dr. Ava. I don't want to mansplain it to you.
No. I'm going to mansplain what periods are to Dr. Ava. We have said before, we have had an ongoing contest. We're trying to figure out what our next intro bit was going to be. We already did the periodic table of the elements. Then we went and we did the logical fallacies. And now we have settled on our newest one, thanks to a listener suggestion off Twitter, which is geological periods.
I'm going to address the fans directly. You guys really let me down. I just needed one vote for euphemism for dong, and I could have been on the ballot.
And I got to say this, legally speaking, I would have had to accept that if it came in, but it didn't come in, and thankfully I didn't have to. So Damien is right. Every single one of you helped me keep euphemisms for dong off this show.
And sway the weight towards more archaeology in this show.
That's right.
A little bit further.
He did ask for that.
I'm going to be passive-aggressively taking this out on the fans with terrible comedy. Or God knows, till God knows when.
Sounds like you preemptively did that strike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm pretty passive-aggressive. I hated the audience long before this.
You guys might wonder, okay, geological periods, what does that mean? We divide time up in different ways. Geological time periods tend to be divided by certain things that happen during those periods or at the end or beginning of them. There are larger divisions of time. For instance, super eons are the biggest, goes down to eons, then eras, then periods. Then there are smaller units of time called epochs and then ages. So we're kind of in the middle with periods. That's kind of like a good middle ground. It's also what you'll hear a lot of people referring to. And if you have a general idea of the geological periods of the Earth's history, you can kind of have a good idea of what's going on and place almost anything you hear in historical sciences or paleontology or archaeology into a specific area. So it's very, very useful. We'll touch a little bit on the smaller bits like ages and epochs when appropriate, and as well as things like eons when it's appropriate. But for now, geological periods are all you need to know.
As a space archaeologist, they're very vague when they say long ago in a galaxy far away.
That was not space archaeology.
Is that
George
an era?
Lucas.
Is that an epoch?
No, that was George Lucas.
Huh. Wasn't he an archaeologist?
No, he was not.
Didn't he steal a golden monkey and switch it with sand?
I am so done with this right now.
I think we should do something that's more grammatical.
Euphemisms for dong.
That is certainly more grammatical. No, Damien, it's a capital C for cock.
Gene Goodall?
That's orthography. It's different.
In fact, when we go back to our first one, which we're doing today, congratulations, this is Science Faction 170, Science Faction, the Hadean era.
Not my intro.
So we actually have to go back to a time where there aren't even periods at this particular point. This is an eon, and there are eras within it. But because this is so old, so long ago, this is before they even had periods, much like a young lady. You can go back far enough beforehand, and you can get to a pre-period point in history.
So it would be wrong of me to think of this period in a sexual way.
It absolutely
is
totally
illegal. I could be locked up.
Yeah, it should be. Yeah.
I should get rid of all that young earth porn I had.
That's right. This Hadean period is very tumultuous. This is basically the beginning
Hadean,
of the Earth.
Hadean, like, as in hell?
It is, Hades. Exactly. And that's why it's referred Hades. To it that way. Hades, because it is a hellish period of time. This is right after the Earth first formed.
Yeah, Barbies. I hate Barbies.
That's weird. Okay. This is right after the Earth first formed 4.6 billion years ago and lasts to about 4 billion years ago. There are some subdivisions within this, but since there's not a lot of stuff that we know to be going on within this period, there aren't a whole bunch of divisions, which is why we don't have periods within it. However, some of the subdivisions that are noted are the pre-Nectarian and the Nectarian, and the division between those two is when the moon is formed. So at some point during this Hadean period, what we think is a planet or planetoid smashed into Earth, causing the most amazing explosive collision that we know of happening in our solar system in the last 4.5 billion years. And that not only sent the Earth spinning at its current rate, but it dislodged a huge chunk of that Earth material up into the sky, which became the moon. So that is the main dividing point between the pre-Nectarian and the Nectarian eras of the Hadean eon. So there were some stuff going on. We have now predated life to the point where we actually think there was a little bit of life or proto-life going on at the very end of the Hadean. So that's very interesting because for a long time, part of the Hadean was marked by the lack of life. But we keep kind of finding older and older evidence, and so now we've gotten back to the point where we actually do think there was the beginning of life in this hellish world.
And we are mollycoddled compared to the early life on
this
planet.
We really are, yeah. Like, we have it very good compared to anything that was living in the Hadean. So
I'm revising my skepticism. I already learned something.
There we go, yeah. And you will be able to place kind of what goes on in geological time. I mean, you know, one of the interesting things is as we progress through this, you're going to start placing things in context. You know, when the dinosaurs came about, when bacteria came about, when eukaryotes came around. And you're going to find that really, that is in the blink of an eye. When you think of dinosaurs and stuff, I mean, I don't want to spoil it too much, but we're only talking about a few hundred million years ago that we see the beginning of dinosaurs, like maybe 200 million years ago. We see the beginning of dinosaurs or proto-dinosaurs and stuff. This Hadean period, which is just this, almost this big blank period, that's 0.6 billion years, 600 million years. That is three times longer than before the first dinosaur, and it's just this big, long epic. So when we start going through these big geological time frames, you're going to see, wow, not just humanity, but life, megafaunal life as we recognize it, is kind of the blink of an eye of the Earth's history.
We couldn't get Ken Hammond here today, but I've heard him make the argument that 4.6 billion years is 6,000 years in metric time.
Oh, I see. It's all just a units issue.
Yeah, see, wow. Both science and religion can exist together.
You know, normally I don't think Ken Ham is much of an expert as anything, but since he comes from New Zealand, a country that uses the metric system, maybe he is. Maybe he knows this much better than us.
It's a mystery to everybody in this room but at Dr. Ava.
Yeah. So anyway, regardless, that is our new intro bit. Hope you guys like it. We will be taking a new one of those every single week.
I don't like it. That's
okay.
I was waving my arms. It doesn't communicate well on podcast, but I was frantically disagreeing with Bobby's.
I just thought you were frantically disagreeing with me, your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me as always is my hand-waving comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. I just realized I set myself up for failure. Like, what if I'm ever choking and I'm trying to get
Wave,
you guys' attention,
yeah.
But I just
think you're being critical. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you. It's a good story. Speaking of somebody who never chokes, our scientist for the evening, Dr. Ava. Dr. Ava, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm excited about the periods.
Yeah, you are.
That's the first time a woman has ever said that.
I'm always good for a surprise.
And if you guys want a surprise, come on out here to the Madhouse Comedy Club where we tape this particular podcast. Come on out for Saturday night for the Saturday Night Showcase. And when you're not doing that, go ahead and check out our website at www.thescienceFaction.com. And if you want to come out and see members of this show and the general science community, come on out next week, Saturday, April 22nd, for the March for Science in downtown San Diego. It's going on all over the nation. We are doing it here in San Diego in downtown. I will be there probably ranting through a microphone, supporting not only science, but science funding and the need for the existence of things like the EPA, for schools to be able to teach evolution, for general science knowledge, and the acceptance of human-caused climate change. All of that stuff is super important. So if you want to not just be a science listener, but also a science participator, come on out, throw some shoes on, and come walk with us through downtown San Diego next weekend.
Doing that's a great way to stick it to the anti-science man. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to know what sticks it to him even better?
What's that?
Hitting subscribe on Science Faction's iTunes page, giving us a 5-star review, and commenting.
I heard that pisses off Mike Pence to no end.
Oh, Ted Cruz hates it when you do that. He also hates it when you tweet us at Faction Science.
And what you won't hate is this week's science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Guys, interesting science article this week. It almost could have been put in the misreports section, but I already had something filling the misreports section, and so I couldn't put it in there.
This is the worst intro to an article. Usually you lie and say it's a really exciting article. This time you're just saying fraud.
Now,
fraud!
It is an exciting article, but it's one of those where the scientists did exciting work, and then the media science writers got a hold
of
it.
Wait, isn't that the case almost every week?
Not as egregiously as this. This is one of those where the science writers got a hold of it and definitely kind of embellished/lied a lot about a lot of stuff.
You walked into the studio today with a chip on your shoulder, and this is why.
Next week, I'm supporting science, but this week, I'm fighting it. What the headlines you'll see will say is that they were able to find life 10 kilometers below the Earth's surface. Now, that would obviously be a very big deal if we were finding a whole bunch of life that deep in the Earth.
Can you remind us why that would be a big deal?
There's a few reasons, and that's a good point. We should go over this. Because if you think of the Earth's biome, the actual amount of biological mass that we know of on Earth, we always think essentially the ground up. And those who are really into it and detailed, they might even think a few meters down. We know there are some funguses and bacteria that live in the soil. Obviously, those have to be included as well.
Morlocks.
Unless I was referring to a whole bunch of different species of funguses. But regardless.
Some awesome group of dudes.
Oh, fun guys. Yeah, that's right. It's true. But regardless, if we're trying to calculate the biomass of Earth and it turns out there's life that goes 10 kilometers down, we're going to have to change a lot of our equations. It's also going to change what we know about basically the entire interrelatedness of living things. What is eating what? Because I guarantee you that wouldn't be an isolated system. It's not like once we go below the Earth, all of a sudden that's a different biome and that has no interaction with us. That's going to be dependent on our waterfall and the pollution we put out, on our construction schedules, everything like that. So if we find out that there's a whole bunch of stuff living that deep, we're going to have to completely change our mathematics in terms of, you know, the biology calculations we do, but also how we treat the environment and protecting it in ways that we didn't think we had to protect it before.
We're not protecting it very well anyway.
We're not doing the greatest job. No. That's why you need to be out at that March for Science next week.
What could we do that the horrible living environment down there, I mean, short of pouring concentrated nuclear waste down there, I don't know that
it's
we
could. Practically the Hadean down there. Well, I'll tell you what they did do. So scientists went down to Mariana's Trench. We all know that is the deepest part of the ocean. And they went down to these hydrothermal vents that are down there. They started looking in these hydrothermal vents, and they started basically finding traces of organic material that seemed to come from living things coming from deep within those vents. You might
Could they have just fallen down there?
Just fallen into the hydrothermal vents?
Into the vents and then being spewed up again?
No, I don't think that's very likely. I think there's a few things stopping that. One is, those vents are kind of like a one-way.
They're never closed for maintenance.
Yeah, they just put one of those like slippery wet floor signs right outside of it. One of the things is there's stuff constantly flowing out of it. So much like an open wound, it's actually hard to get, you know, like they always say, don't get blood to blood with somebody. It's actually kind of hard to transfer diseases that way because you're bleeding out and pushing blood out. In a similar way, there's constantly stuff flowing up out of there, not really an input as much.
It's like a shooken up soda. Nothing's coming.
That's exactly how I thought of it. But also, we you know, obviously, it wasn't just a one-time thing. They took samples from different parts of these vents, and they found some organic material coming up. To me, what that says is, hey, we have organic material, possibly life, in these vents at the bottom of Mariana's Trench. Isn't
you're
that
not an
interesting?
Expert, but you're just a fucking archaeologist.
That's true.
Keep that in mind.
That is true.
Stay in your lane.
But they went those science writers went the extra step and said, oh my God, well, what does that mean? There must be life deep down in that vent. We're getting it down from way down in there. And if we do the math calculations, we know that if we get down to 10 kilometers down, then fuck, blah, 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 carry the one. We get to this temperature, which we're pretty sure life can't exist at. So we can say just above that depth could be the limits of where this organic material is coming from. And therefore, it could be that far deep.
This sounds really impressive that they're going to have to recalculate all the things they know, but all previous knowledge about what was going on under the sea was just in that Sebastian the Crab song in The Little Mermaid.
Yeah, how did he get his PhD?
Most Caribbean colleges segregate against crabs.
But what it does say is, you know, hey, there's organic material here. Again, super interesting. The bottom of Mariana's Trench, we have a lot of ideas that maybe life started, abiogenesis started near those vents at the bottom of the ocean. So I'm always interested when I hear about life near those vent areas. They also have very different life ways. You got to imagine there is zero sunlight getting down there. So they are not using any kind of photosynthetic elements. They are actually dissolving minerals and the heat and stuff like that. So different types of life, always very interesting, but it really doesn't mean that there's life 10 kilometers down in these vents. It just means it has the possibility. Oh, and by the way, when you say below the surface of the Earth, you're implying that it's under the dirt, not at the bottom of the ocean deep down in a vent crevice. Those are very different things because we're not calculating all this biomass that's under the continents. You're calculating what's along these ridge lines.
Well, okay, but water has a surface. I mean,
right.
And so does land.
True, water has a surface.
So what's racist against like the states of matter? Like you only count solid matter as a state, but you don't count liquid matter?
You would say 10 kilometers underneath the ocean, not underneath the surface of the Earth.
You're reading it like on one-fourth of this planet. That statement is 100% correct.
Three-fourths. Anyway, regardless, the math is not your strong suit. What it really is saying is there is life that is possibly fairly deep within these vents. It is no deeper than 10 kilometers within these vents, but it could be up to that deep. That is still interesting in of itself, but we have certainly not definitively found some kind of life that deep down in there, and certainly not underneath the Earth crust or the Earth dirt itself just down below the ocean. But future research in this area, look very closely to it. I think we're going to find some stuff that has to do with abiogenesis, that has to do with life formation, where cells come from.
Dinosaurs.
Of course. Pulling energy out of the environment without using things like the sun or typical photosynthesis or typical cell mechanisms that we currently use. So all very, very interesting stuff. Pay attention to this field, but don't buy into that whole 10 kilometers below the surface.
Science Faction, the only podcast where you can hear a dinosaur-loving space archaeologist sharpshoot other scientific findings.
Space archaeologist. Get the fucking out of here, space archaeologist.
That's the new frontier of archaeology.
How dare you. One of the things, too, to think about, we have been finding more and more evidence that we do have some kind of bacteria and fungi below the surface of the crust or the earth itself. It may go down quite deep, and that to me is very interesting. I want to know whether or not they're respirating. I want to know if they're providing oxygen to us. I want to know if they're anaerobic and therefore they don't, and if so, where they're getting their energy from. All of that is super, super interesting, and I want to know what their role is in the whole biological circle, in the web, whether or not they are food for other animals, and if we start damaging them, do we just screw up the rest of the ecology?
I actually just want to know if I can grow lettuce down there so that I can hide away from Trump.
No, you would need sunlight.
Maybe there's different...
There's non-photosynthetic lettuce.
Exactly.
Seaweed needs sunlight, too.
You're being ridiculous.
God damn it.
I don't remember sunlight being in that crab song.
All right, let's go on to the Miss Reports.
Didn't we just fucking do that?
Yeah, exactly.
The Miss Reports, where we tell you how wrong you are.
We cut my fucking bit. Like, why can't we cut the articles bit?
The biggest Miss Report was allowing you on the show.
It's all alternative science articles.
Oh, alternative fact articles.
Yeah.
This Miss Report... I had to bring this up. I saw this article and I went, huh, that's funny. That's a weird title. That's a weird theory on that. And then I read it and I went,
what was the title?
That's complete bullshit. The title was...
That was the title?
Yeah, it should have been.
That's complete bullshit.
It would have been more accurate. The title was, humans didn't cannibalize for nutrition.
Oh.
Now, this is looking at both Neanderthals and then Homo sapien groups to look at the cannibalization practices. As a background, we know that both groups have and did cannibalize throughout their history. For humans, we know...
So the implication is that they did it for fun?
Yeah, just for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
No, his implication is it was never a steady nutritional source, or it was done when somebody else died as a scavenger thing, or, you know, obviously...
As a ritual or something.
Yeah, ritual, or, you know, we know even in modern times there are things like the Donner Party, or...
The what party?
The Donner Party.
What kind of party is that?
It was America's cannibalism party.
Yeah.
It was.
Oh, she's German. She doesn't know. I don't know why we teach this. We love to talk about it in America, but every school child learns about the Donner Party here, which was a group who was going, I believe it was kind of like the Oregon Trail type groups, and they were pioneers, and they were coming over the mountains. They got snowed in for the winter, and they basically had to eat half the people in the group.
So it wasn't actually a party.
It depends what your definition is.
How cool do you think cannibalism is?
Right.
That
very cool.
That answers your question.
Yeah. What he's saying, and the way he made his argument was that it's not really of a nutritional benefit. So what he did is he actually broke down the nutritional benefit you get from a human body.
I can imagine that Damien is very nutritious.
Yeah, Damien would have a bunch of meat on him, but
yeah.
I got a marble going. I mean, I'm fatty, but not too fatty. I got muscle. Like, I imagine I'd be a good 70% beef. Like, that's...
Yeah. Well, he looked at not only the size and weight of the meat on a person, but the nutritional value of human meat versus the other game that these people were hunting at that time.
The problem is, though, that other game is much faster than humans.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of problems with it. Thank you, Ava, for bringing up one of them, which is, he says, you know, like, okay, well, you know, how are you catching them? You know, they're hunters and stuff. It's like... Well, one is you're eliminating the fact that you can just trick people. Like, it's way easier to trick people than it is a buffalo. Buffalo's always going to be kind of wary of you. It's going to want to stay away. You can't be like, hey, buffalo, come over here. Your mom said to come over and talk to me. Like, you can't do that with a buffalo.
Buffalo parents are way less stressed and way more alert to their cat.
Yeah, and so he thought, like, oh, this is just aggression or ritual. So, again, he compared that human nutrition to all these animals and basically made a big Excel spreadsheet and said, look, it doesn't make any sense if you compare it to woolly rhinoceroses or horses or pigs or deer.
Doesn't this lend credence to the argument, though, that man is the deadliest game of all and that you're going to burn way more calories hunting a man and avoiding his counter traps?
I have a question. So, I guess that There are occasional reports of occasional cannibalism in, like, emergency situations. But right. What you're saying is that we have independent evidence that cannibalism was a widespread phenomenon
yes.
in different cultures?
Not only in humans, but in Neanderthals.
Okay, so what is that evidence?
So, good question. Mm-hmm. In Neanderthals...
I only...
Yeah, you know. Yeah, unlike Damien, you're asking pretty darn good questions.
Thank you.
So, in both humans...
I won't eat you now.
Thank you. So, in both humans and Neanderthals, we have marks on the bones that will let us know when they've been cannibalized. Those are cut marks along the tendons, but they're also literally sometimes chew marks on the bones itself if you're actually eating it right off the bone. When you strip down a carcass to take the meat off, you cut it in specific places with specific tools, and that's one way to tell when it's being eaten. I actually had a professor who specialized in this, and he was very controversial because he would find evidence of human cannibalization in certain North American tribes, and that is now a taboo subject. So when you would find that evidence, sometimes the descendants of those tribes were not happy that he was finding that, but it is what it is.
How far back did that go? Or
so
how far, like,
for Neanderthals,
the...
you know, all the way throughout their history, we see that throughout their 400,000 years in time span.
For
Homo sapiens, we only have 200,000 years of records and not a lot of stuff in the back end, but pretty much once we start getting consistent fossils, we're finding evidence of cannibalization.
And when did it stop?
Doesn't. I mean, the Polynesians were eating each other right up through contact. People, like I said, there's that Chilean soccer team that crashed in the Andes. They ate each other. I saw a documentary called The Hills Have Eyes. They seem to have a lot of people eating one another.
But what he's saying is that we don't know yet whether people did that like as a normal source of nutrition.
Oh, right.
Or,
is it
like,
actually a nutritional thing or is it just ritual? You know, this person.
Or just like when there's absolutely nothing else to eat.
At a certain point, is it kind of harder to tell it was cannibalism because you don't get the teeth marks because they were just made into a stew at the end? Like, they just boiled the meat off the bones?
Well, actually, that's another way to tell is there's polish on a bone when it's cooked in certain ways. And so that is another way we can tell when the meat has been cooked. But like the New Guinea Highlanders, they were eating each other. I believe they still do, but they were eating each other well up to the 70s and 80s. And that was the spread of a disease called kuru, which was a prion disease. Because when you ate the brain of somebody with kuru, then you got it in your brain and that prion would spread.
We've talked about this before, but again, kuru... Most adorable name for a prion.
Yeah, for a horrible disease.
What's the disease?
Well, it's really interesting because prion diseases, they're not infectious diseases in the sense that it's a bacteria or a virus. It's
they're
just
mortal.
A protein that has been folded in the wrong way. And when that protein touches another protein, it causes it to fold in the wrong way. So all this is an inert protein that gets into your brain. It touches one of the proteins in your brain, and it makes two of them change to be misfolded. Then each of those two touch two more and change to make those two misfolded. Eventually, your brain becomes a sponge. This is what causes mad cow disease, a couple other diseases like that. Mm-hmm. The scariest part is you won't know for like a decade, maybe more, that it's happened to you. Not only is there no cure, there's no chance of a cure. There's nothing you can do. Those things are misfolded. They're gone. Your brain's gone. You're dead. It's the end of the line.
What's scary is that aren't they immortal? Like you can't.
Yes.
You
oh, that's the other
them.
Thing. They're totally immortal, meaning if a cow gets mad cow disease, you burn that meat and bury it and then dig it up 10 years later and touch it, you can still get that disease. So, yeah, not great. Not a great thing, those prion diseases, which is one of the reasons that maybe that cannibalism is taboo. You know, we know there are a lot of diseases, not just prion diseases, but other diseases that get transferred that way.
I mean, it just seems like there'd be a price. Maybe you'd feed yourself, but if you couldn't make this a practice outside of emergency, because it would destroy the social fabric of your society if you thought everybody was going to eat you. If everybody was a saber-toothed cat.
Right. So we'll go back to his article. He's basically saying it can't be for nutritional reasons, one of which is because you don't get that much nutrition from somebody. And if you had a group of 60 people, you'd essentially have to replace somebody this many years for doing it. Well, that argument totally takes out of account the possibility that you're hunting somebody out of your group. If you're hunting somebody who's not in your group, there is no value loss for killing that person and eating it. Whatever meat and nutritional value you get is good.
Also, you can have like a, you don't have to exclusively eat people.
Yeah, exactly. That can be a part of a diet that a group recognizes. And we do think the Polynesians had this culture into historical
times.
You
only do that on Easter.
There was a time when slavery was considered super progressive. Like, I'm not going to eat this guy. I'm not going to kill him. I'm just going to own him
for a while.
Shall I kill him with labor?
I think we might need to take a step back, and we're not endorsing any of these practices.
I think Damien is quite honest.
Don't speak for yourself, Dr. Ava.
I am.
Obviously, the guy has made some assumptions that just aren't correct. He's, or at least you can't assume them to be correct. and he's going and drawing a conclusion as opposed to just saying, hey, I did this work where I've calculated the nutrition of a human body, and that is useful.
I don't know if you can get a paper published for that.
Absolutely you can. If not here, then in, like, the Michelin Guide. The Michelin Cannibalism Guide. They love Polynesia and New Guinea. That's...
Yeah, there's the University of Papua New Guinea is conducting field research. I'm picturing their FDA pyramid, their food pyramid.
Feet are on the top.
Yeah. You got water handle or love handles last. That is at the bottom.
Oh,
you
man.
Only have so much
okay,
of that.
Okay, let's stop this.
Thigh meat, though, that's right in the middle.
Do you think you can get IRB for that?
Well, I mean, I guess if you argued that you were going to eat the IRB if they didn't approve it, I think that might work out. But regardless, I do think that's a huge misreport. It should be noted. I do think cannibalism could have been part of many societies, just general nutrition. In fact, I think we have some historical documented evidence that it was the case for the Polynesians. It probably was the case for some other groups as well, including New Guinea Highlanders. And it is kind of a very short-sighted notion to do these calculations and think they tell you anything more than the nutritional value of a human being.
Again, space archaeologist, sharpshoot another scientist.
All right, guys, let's move right on to everybody's favorite game, I Call BS.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
The segment where Bobby gets his revenge for every joke I've made up to this point in the episode.
You also call those jokes?
Also known as a segment in which I'm not ever right.
I don't even remember Damien beating you yet, so hopefully at some point he does.
That's
but for now,
times I fucking stomped
it. I don't remember it that
I
way.
I think so. There's this French philosopher that I really like, Alain de Botton, and his theory is that sex is only there to keep us humble.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For me, that's I call BS.
Like, okay.
All week long, I
humble.
Tell undergrads what they should learn. And now I come here on the weekend, and you tell me what I don't know.
That's right. So okay, that's a good way to look at it. You know, that's
yeah,
a very evolved
it's
mentality.
It's like therapy, just yeah. more brutal.
And Damien also thinks of this like sex, but that's just because he's very turned on by failure. So
yeah, I'm used to being dominated with a ball gag in my mouth, and this fucking segment simulates that perfectly.
All right, let's get started. Article number one. Giant underground tunnels more than 2 meters wide and thousands of feet deep have been found to be burrows dug out by animals. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science, and I'm trying to find a way to turn this into a Richard Gere joke. But I think
what?
You guys get the point.
Yeah, that would be a deep tunnel.
I don't get the point. What?
Richard, there was a famous rumor in which Richard Gere got caught and had to go to the hospital because he had a gerbil in a certain orifice of his body for sexual pleasure.
Not his
a
urethra.
Gerbil.
Uh-huh.
Smaller guinea pig.
Sexier guinea pig.
I like BBW rodents. Give me a guinea pig any day.
All right, and Dr. Ava.
No, I don't think this is science.
Okay, article number two. Scientists in Holland have found an almost perfectly complete skull of a saber-toothed tiger, making it the first discovery in animal in Northern Europe. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science, and I know it is, because I've been doing the show long enough with you that you gave me a solid clue in this.
All right.
And that's, there was no Northern Europe back there. It was Pangaea. Bad science.
All right. And Dr. Ava.
I think it's bad science. All that happened was there was a skull of a tiger, and those stone solid Dutch people attached two elephant trunks to it.
Stone solid? Is that an insult about their intelligence, or are they just, like,
but
jacked?
I don't mean trunk. I meant the...
Tusk.
I don't know what's tusks exactly.
Article number three, a new device can pull water directly from the air without outside electricity. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. It just sounds like an Alex Jones story that the government's keeping out of our hands.
The government's trying to take the water out of the air so we can't get any.
It's Obama.
They're trying to make my skin not be able to be moisturized because they know it bothers me.
Oh, man. I remember when Jesse Ventura used to stop by. Alex Jones is a cut-rate Jesse Ventura.
I've just been chafing all the time. And Dr. Ava.
I think this is science. It reminds me of one of those survival guides that I had as a little kid, how you can get water out of thin air. But
it was like a really efficient German survival guide. It's like, just ask. Can I have some water?
Your average German citizen will more than happily share his water with you.
Article number four. The discovery of a 14,000-year-old site in British Columbia has pushed back the oldest date of archaeological evidence of natives in North America by 1,500 years. Damien, is this science Or bad science.
I'm going to say this is bad science, because if it was science, you would have included it in articles. This is an archaeology article. It's in your fucking wheelhouse. And you seem to think people love archaeology articles.
They do. But good logic, actually. All right, and Dr. Ava.
I'm so convinced by Damien's reasoning. I concur that it's bad science.
She's been copying every fuck. She's tired of losing. She's just
or maybe
time.
You are copying her in advance. Have you thought about that, Damien?
No, I didn't, because it's fucking impossible.
But you just did it.
I am a spiritual medium, not a psychic.
Let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one. Giant underground tunnels 2 meters wide and thousands of feet deep have been found to be burrows dug out by animals. Both of you guys thought this one was false, and this one is science. Super interesting. This is actually one of my favorite articles of this week. It was actually found to be likely the home of the giant ground sloth. They found these in South America. These are huge, huge tunnels. I mean, think about this. Like, literally,
yes,
more than
exactly.
2 meters
that's
in diameter.
Dwarfs
a bear. Thousands of feet deep. They have very telltale designs.
How big is that freaking sloth?
Sometimes they're like 20 feet tall. Yeah, so, like,
they dwarf
wait,
bears.
Wait, the sloth is
the
20
giant ground
feet
sloth.
Tall?
Yeah. They used to be here up until, like, actually up until almost contact.
No, wait. 20 feet. You know how tall that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, they
can look into your second story building. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's outstretched and stuff, and it would never be in a
standing
like, yeah. But,
I've never heard of things.
But they're huge. They're gigantic. I think the ones you actually see are they actually sit or stand like 12 or 13 feet tall. But if you were to stretch them out, you know, like they would be that long.
But they're sloths, so they're always sleeping.
Yeah, all right.
And they went extinct fairly recently.
Yeah, they humans hunted them here. Anyway, regardless. It's super interesting, and they would find these tunnels, and they never really thought anything about it. They thought maybe they were a geological phenomenon, they're just caves, they don't know. This one paleontologist started looking at it and being like, motherfucker, these are scrape marks. And he started finding that it had been scraped out, and also they have these weird shapes. Almost think of, like, as opposed to a straight tunnel, think of kind of a necklace, a beaded necklace where the beads are pushed together so there's no, like, string area showing in between. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like a globe cut out of the earth and then another globe next to it, because it's the habit of how the sloth was digging. It would kind of dig this hole out.
And then take a
and then
out.
Go rest. Literally, go rest. And then come and start again on another one. And so it kind of has this bulbous way the entire way through with these giant claw scratch marks
That's
in it. And he's
crazy.
Like, this tunnel isn't a cave. It's a fucking giant ground sloth burrow.
I have such a nightmare tonight.
Go on our website, check out, I'm going to have the pictures of this thing up there. Go check it out. It is really neat. And one of those situations where, hey, we might have been finding these things, because we had giant ground sloths here. We might have been finding these things for the past couple hundred years and writing them off, and we got to start re-looking at them
so,
again.
So, just to clarify, are they extinct or not?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There's, I mean,
but they may have gone extinct as recently as historical times. They may have been here, some waning populations may have been here at contact in South America.
You're a huge mammal. You only eat plants with very low caloric value,
right?
And you're just throwing away energy digging. No wonder you had no energy left to fight off man.
Yeah, but you also had giant claws, and so you could get into your little hole, and then if somebody wanted to fuck with you, and trust me, there was everything from short-faced bears, which make grizzlies look like pieces of shit, to, you know, a lot of American lions and cheetahs and huge predators out here, so you had to defend yourself. So if you just backed into your little hovel and then just slashed at things with your claws.
Like, how slow were they?
And then you took a nap.
Like, were they, like, three-toed sloth slow?
No, they weren't that slow, because they could get out and eat more, so they didn't have that need. But they weren't winning any sprinting competitions. Article number two. Scientists in Holland have found an almost perfectly complete skull of a saber-toothed tiger, making it the first discovery of that animal in Northern Europe. Both of you guys said this was bad science, and this one is bad science. And Damien was right. I did include a clue in there for him, which is one of my pet peeves. There is no such thing as a saber-toothed tiger. There are saber-toothed cats. They do not belong to the tiger family. It is a total misnomer. And
nerd.
Nerd. How dare you?
This is a nerd podcast. He's a guest here.
How dare you? But they did find a saber-toothed cat skull, an almost complete one, in Holland. Again, go to our website and look at the picture. It is very, very cool. This is the third fossil of such an animal that they found there. And this is the European version of that saber-toothed cat. Super, super interesting. Really neat predator. Had a very interesting attack mechanism and really did have those giant teeth that we see in the cartoons, which, by the way, left it vulnerable in certain ways, because if one of those broke off, which they can because of leverage issues, that animal could die very easily. So they were very specific jugular hunters, unlike a lot of the cats we know now, which will pounce on the back, bite the back of the neck, do something like this. They were trying to basically just, boom, use those giant teeth to just get rid of your jugular, just slit it.
I don't know. I mean, like, if you're a saber-toothed tiger, as you
said, it was science,
right? You're still the big one of the biggest, baddest dudes on the planet. Like, yeah, maybe you got like a broken hand, but you're not back then.
You're kind of a little bitch at back then. You had much bigger cats running around, much bigger animals, much more dangerous stuff.
So the only thing that made you big and strong are your silly saber-tooth.
Yeah, exactly.
So the saber-tooth cat then is just has a great PR guy. It wasn't the most badass predator.
No, not at all. But it had sweet teeth. It was the dude with the giant 357 Magnum, but he wasn't a great aim.
I mean, like, if I'm the short-faced bear, I killed way more humans.
Yeah,
And in every cartoon and every depiction of, like, it's always Neanderthals or Homo sapiens killing saber-toothed cats.
I actually heard a guy on a podcast recently talking about this hypothesis that human beings couldn't even occupy the Americas, and the reason it took them so long to do so was that they couldn't occupy it until a short-faced bear went extinct, because essentially it would just kill the shit out of anybody who came in, and so it kept people out of the Americas.
How did it go extinct then?
Maybe climate change with a mixture of hunting from megafaunal hunters, but in terms of mass settlement, a short-faced bear is a scary motherfucker.
And it's hyper-aggressive.
Yeah, hyper-aggressive, way bigger, way stronger than a polar bear or a grizzly, and we think way faster, because it's very lithe. It could probably move and like much quicker and stuff, so very scary animal.
I feel more like a sloth.
You do nap when digging a lot.
But that sloth had to fight off short-faced bears, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Article number 3, a new device can pull water directly from the air without outside electricity. Both of you guys thought this one was true, and this one is science, and very, very cool. This leads the way to Uncle Owen-style moisture farms on Tatooine, of course, but very neat. You could think of how we get water now. If you're off the grid and you're not getting it through a municipal water supply, you get it from a well. That's fine, except for a few things. One, wells are incredibly expensive to drill. It can be $75,000 to $100,000 to drill a well. Number 2, when the water table goes down, that well is useless. If you have a well drilled to 400 feet, the second the water table drops to 410 feet, you have no water. It's also not portable. If you have a well and you want to move your house or your homestead 2 miles down the road, you're shit out of luck. Your well stays where it is. This is a very interesting product. This literally pulls moisture out of the air. Now, we have things that pull moisture out of the air right now. If you're in a humid area and you put your air conditioner on, guess what? You're going to drip a bunch of water out. That's what the condenser does, because anything cold will have dew form on it and you'll get water. The more humid it is, the easier that is. And we've been able to use essentially these passive electric systems, which are basically just a solar cell on top of something, to pull water out of humid air. We've been able to do that for a little while now. This, however, is talking about dry air. Only 20 to 30% humidity. That's really impressive, and it's really important because it means that in most places, at most times, you can pull water out using this passive system. It's got a solar cell. Then underneath that solar cell, it has a metal organic framework, which is basically this group of specially designed metal fibers that go through, and then a condenser at the bottom. And as the air goes through this electrically charged thing, it pulls the water molecules out of the air and condenses it and brings it down.
What is the minimum humidity you need for this?
That's the thing. We don't even know, because this prototype is already working really well. And as we know, the prototypes are almost never as efficient as the final product. And right now, in that 20 to 30% humidity, this prototype, this first generation prototype, is able to pull out 2.3 liters of water from the air over a 12-hour period using only 1 kilogram of that MOF. Meaning, that metal organic framework, again, when we say using it, it doesn't mean that that goes away once you use it that one time. You have that consistently.
Don't we just run into the same problem with the well? I mean, once we have enough of these and the humidity goes down to 2%.
We pull all the water out?
I mean, what do we do then?
We drill wells and pump the well water into the air to make it more humid.
I like you thinking, Bobby.
This will be great, because this could mean the idea of really off-the-grid living. You have this thing in your house. You produce
how
like...
How big is this?
You can expand them. Think of 1 kilogram of MOF is not that big. So you would think of something maybe the size of a pizza box squared. And you can make these larger and larger. This could be on the roof of your house along with the regular solar cells, just like water. But you bring up an interesting thing, though. And here's kind of a bonus question. Why would this water not be able to completely replace things like well water or municipal water for human consumption? Can you guys think of it?
Because it doesn't have any minerals.
Exactly. Boom, Dr. Ava. Boom. God, you're an idiot, Damien. Damn it. Oh, no wonder you lost I Call BS. Jesus.
I was going to say fluoride.
You can always lick a little bit.
Every time.
I lost when we were down.
Every time. Yes, this essentially would be distilled water. It's water without minerals, which is fine. You can drink it. It'll go through your body. It'll hydrate you, though it does go through you fairly quickly. It does not have minerals, which you need. You need things like calcium. You need other things that you usually pull out of water that's run through rocks and kind of taken it with them. You can still get that from a supplement, but it should be noted that distilled water doesn't completely take the place of well water or municipal water.
Where are my kids going to get lead in their water if they're getting it from the air?
Anyway, super, super interesting stuff. I love anything like this that leads to off-the-grid lifestyles and living. I always think this is super interesting.
You run need it soon, too.
Yeah.
Could we run the water for like a rock tumbler? We just have a rock tumbler constantly going. It just drips through that.
That's how you get your minerals. And lastly, article number 4, the discovery of a 14,000-year-old site in British Columbia has pushed back the oldest date of archaeological evidence of natives to North America by 1,500 years. Both of you guys thought this one was bad science, and this one is indeed bad science.
Yeah, because who would have gone to British Columbia?
Right. Well, right. They actually did come through British Columbia, and there is a 14,000-year-old site there, and it is very exciting and very interesting, especially because the natives kind of called it. They were like, hey, we had these rumors, these oral stories of a place we used to stay when times got bad, and blah, 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 and they
founded it by constellations.
God damn it. No. That turned out to be a cornfield, that stupid Canadian. Never mind. I'm not even talking about him.
What's that teenager doing now?
I hope he's not going to school. That's what I hope.
He's going to Berkeley.
But I did leave you some clues here, too, which is we already know and we've talked about before sites like the Paisley Caves in Oregon, as well as some things like Topper on the East Coast, places like Monte Verde down in South America, that predate that 14,000-year-old date. So while this is an interesting site, it not only isn't the oldest in North America, it certainly doesn't push back the date 1,500 years. And as we covered a couple of weeks ago, we actually did find the oldest site in North America. It's along the Alaska-Canadian border, and that's 25,000 years old, so much older than this site itself. Gave you a few clues in there, and you guys did a very good job. But this is an interesting site regardless. Go ahead and check out the literature on it while you wallow in the fact that Damien horribly lost I Call BS this week, got his ass handed to him. Not only did Ava beat him by standard rules, of course, the tie goes to scientists.
The standard, very unfair rules.
Just, no, standard rules.
Yeah, not only did she beat by that, Jim Crow podcast
she
law.
Then got the bonus question about the distilled water right, which I count as 3 points, meaning that she almost doubled Damien's score in this particular game, just demolishing him in a brutal, brutal victory. Congratulations, Dr. Ava, for coming in and showing him how it's done.
I do have to admit that I copied him on question number 4.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Oh, I'm sorry. 1 2 4. 1-2-4.
That's fantastic. All right, let's get right on to Damien Channels a Dead Scientist.
And now, Damien Channels a Dead Scientist.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
Hello, and welcome to Damien Channels a Dead Scientist, the segment where I get back at Bobby for his previous segment. He's done his best to keep the supernatural from our audience. We've had to cut this segment the last couple weeks, but it's back, and it's back with a vengeance. So that we don't run out of time, and he cuts me off right now, I'm just going to get this thing started. All right?
This is, of course, the bit where Damien pretends to have his body inhabited by the spirit, apparently, of a dead scientist.
Loady, loady, loady.
Oh, dear Lord.
Who summoned Mary Jackson to the Madhouse Comedy Club? Ooh, look at you guys, sister baby honey child.
I am so offended already.
Well, I just got a typical southern accent, baby. Why don't I understand?
I don't think that's typical, but okay, keep going.
Ain't you one of the finest little honkies I've ever seen?
I don't think that's an appropriate lingo for this room, but okay, let's keep going.
As I said that, I looked at him. I'm in the body of one fine-ass honky right now.
That's a honky.
Oh, with the white boy. I love me some white boys. That's why I went to work at NASA. By the way, do you guys know anything about Mary Jackson? You guys know anything about
it? I think they just made a movie about you, but I didn't see the movie. I'm aware you were one of the NASA computers, right? Back when a computer was a person, not an object.
We'll get into that in a second, but yeah, NASA actually could have purchased Apple computers, but they preferred to use Apple bottom computers.
I think I need to take a break.
Did Dr. Avery need to leave the room for a second? We got two powerful female scientists in the room, sister.
She does get offended sometimes when another female scientist is around.
I'm offended on so many levels on behalf of so many people.
I was upset too. I lived a very segregated life, girl. Try being a black scientist in the American South, girl. You get to run up a tons of opposition.
You know, despite the voice he's saying it in, that's actually true.
Yeah, that's
she did face a lot of stuff, and especially in that time period. You know, try being a black female scientist in the South now, much less 50 years ago.
Thank you. So people, white people today are so much nicer than they were when I was alive. Yes, I was Mary Jackson. I was played by Janelle Monáe in the Hidden Figures movie. Just fun little fact about Janelle Monáe that I know Bobby knows, maybe Dr. Ava doesn't. She beat Justin Bieber. And I'm a believer myself. In Best New Artist in the Grammys. And I think Jamie only knows that because he's in a heterosexual relationship with some girl.
Who also likes Justin Bieber, I'm assuming.
Big time. I was a NASA mathematician and aerospace engineer.
I'm still shell-shocked. I'm literally sitting here with my mouth open thinking about whether I can come back here ever.
Well, Dr. Ava, are you involved with the community? Because I was. I led a Girl Scout troop for over 30 years. In fact, as a matter of fact, I did this crazy science experiment where I taught them how to build a wind tunnel. But it's very difficult to teach math to girls.
Well, you know what the good thing is? If she wasn't offended before...
Well, I just really want Dr. Ava on Mary Jackson's side before we really get into the question.
All right. Mary, do you have anything you'd like to say before I tear this apart?
Yeah, please tear it apart, please.
Yes, if you're asking about some of the programs I worked in, I worked under the NASA's Compressibility Research Division, where we basically researched what hot compresses would do for the astronauts.
That's not what they researched at all.
Sounds like somebody's never been to NASA. Well, I mean, the program has evolved a little bit since the 60s. You might appreciate this. I also worked for NASA's Full Scale Research Division, and that was an early BBW weighing project for a lot of them fine-ass white boys at NASA, like a full-figured lady, and the High Speed Aeronautics Division. And there's no joke. That's pretty much just...
Okay, so a couple of interesting things about the actual Mary Jackson was one of the computers, again, back when a computer was a person, not an object, who was doing the calculations, helped send John Glenn into space. And John Glenn was such a fan of them and relied on them so much that when NASA first brought in the first computers, like actual like device computers, he was like, I don't want that fucking thing doing it. I want those women to do it. They know what they're doing. I don't trust this box.
Yeah, thank you, John Glenn.
Imagine that shift. Imagine that sea change in ideals where you don't trust the calculator. You trust a person to do the math instead.
Listening to a segment on the radio on the way here, and they were talking about pilotless planes, and I was like, no way in hell will I get ever on a pilotless plane.
It's funny, it's probably way safer.
No, probably not.
But, I mean, at least driverless cars are certainly way safer.
I can't wait.
They're also not.
They're insanely way safer. In fact, the millions of hours... No, literally, mathematically, they are. Millions of hours of use with essentially no accidents. They're way, way safer.
Yeah, on a long enough timeline, there's going to be a movie about a barrier-breaking robot pilot who beat the odds and was the first robot pilot to work for NASA.
Like even Tesla's autopilot, which I think has technically, they've had two fatalities with it. With the millions of hours of drive time on it, it would be the equivalent of essentially taking a 30,000 death rate from the United States every year and dropping that down to about 4 people. So, quite a different thing.
I also worked at NASA for 34 years. I reached the highest position that an engineer can reach, and then at the end of my career, I realized unless I was going to be a supervisor there, I had to take a demotion. So I took a demotion to become NASA's first affirmative action program supervisor and the federal women's program supervisor.
All right. I got an easy one for you. Mary, you were, of course, a brilliant savant when it came to mathematics, especially simple calculations, and was able to prove that very easily. That is what helped get us into space, helped get John Glenn safely back to Earth, and you were known to be very, very quick with those numbers, and so a real easy one that should be no problem for you, the square root of 28,900, please.
I'm going to be honest with you. I had me a little calculator that I just punched things in.
There wasn't calculators back then, Mary.
No, that's what we called an Asian person. Oh. I was the computer, but I had like a mean little Asian right there. He was my calculator.
You had like Short Round from Indiana Jones?
Yeah, pretty much, except he had a much more offensive accent.
Dr. Jackson!
Ooh, get your Asian ass over here. Give me those numbers.
Boom! Proved you wrong, Damien. Once again, I have done my job in satisfying the science rigor and proving that you are indeed lying. There is no Mary Jackson spirit inside you. The square root of 28,900, by the way, happens to be none other than 170 for this episode of Science Faction 170.
That's not fair. I didn't have my calculator. In fact, I haven't fed him in years. I hope he's okay. All right, well, I could tell Dr. Ava's not a big fan. Dr. Ava's a lot like those Southern white men who looked at me with disgust and prejudice. So I know that look from a white lady, and I'm just going to leave. Goodbye, y'all. Oh, God, who was it this time?
Don't ever do this again.
What was it? Did I channel an Asian scientist or something? Was it a very thick accent?
She doesn't like it when other female scientists are brought up on the show. She would rather, you know, just she wants to have that.
This is just wrong on so many levels.
I don't even know what voice I... So, you know, I can't wait to listen to the episode. It's probably very educational.
You will be the only one who says that about this episode. All right.
Thank you very much. This has been Damien Channels, A Dead Scientist.
Thank you, audience, for joining us for Science Faction 170, where you learned about the Hadean period, about why there isn't necessarily life 10 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface, why a bullshit article about human cannibalization might be wrong, how an animal dug a 2-meter-wide, 2,000-foot-deep burrow, how the Dutch found a saber-toothed cat skull almost complete in northern Holland, how you can get water from almost dry air, and a 14,000-year-old site in British Columbia. Thank you so much for joining us for 170. Feel free to come out to next week's March in Support of Science in downtown San Diego, and please come on back next week for Science Faction 171.
Ooh, girl! I put the ass in NASA.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.